Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Happy New Year. It's episode 28 of Dudes on Hockey. Dude, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, dude.
Yeah, it's good we had a couple weeks laid off there. We had five Sharks games in the interim, and I think I had a pretty good New Year. Did you?
Dude, I had an amazing New Year. I've got some good stories about going down to Mississippi.
Do tell.
Dude, I went to Mississippi and had chicken fried everything.
Okay.
I went to give blood yesterday, and my blood type is butter. But I had a good time on New Year's Eve. You know what I did, dude?
What'd you do?
I went, as promised, Mississippi River Kings versus the Shreveport Mud Bugs.
Have you ever seen a mud bug?
Yes, I saw them play hockey, actually, on New Year's Eve.
Dude. Do they have a mascot? And what did the mascot look like?
The mascot for the River Kings is actually a frog.
Oh.
But it looks like an alligator. I thought it was an alligator, but then someone corrected me and said, "Is a frog.
Is a frog.
It's a frog." And then they've got some sort of mystery animal that they call the Thing that runs around like Sharky and throws t-shirts and stuff. Very, very fun, actually, going to a minor league sporting event. I mean, I've been to a San Jose Giants game here locally, and this was sort of the same type of atmosphere, probably about 3,500 people there or something like that.
That's cool. So you were real close to the rink then.
I was sitting right on the glass on the penalty box, visitor's penalty box.
Awesome.
And the usher comes up to I'm there with my father-in-law, first hockey game for him and my wife. And I'm sitting there in my Sharks jersey and, you know, I'm walking through the arena in my Sharks jersey and this kid, as I'm walking by, goes, "Sharks are cool."
Nice.
Yeah.
Sharks are cool.
You know, actually down in Mississippi, their team, I saw a lot of Predators jerseys. So, you know, that's Nashville is probably the closest thing they have to an NHL franchise. And St. Louis, it's actually 3 hours to St. Louis from Tunica, Mississippi, which is where the River Kings play, and 4 hours to Nashville. So they're kind of split in the middle, dude. But I have to say I had a great time. River Kings won 6-0, sat right behind the box. The guys behind us heckled the opposing team in the box. No profanity. They just came in there, and this guy came in. His name was Brett Angel. He's the enforcer for the Mud Bugs.
Mm-hmm.
Over 200 penalty minutes in, I think, 30 games already.
Wow.
There's a great fight. And he got 17 minutes. He sat in the box for the whole time. These guys are talking. He goes, "Hey, Angel, your mama know you're in the box right now?" The guy said, "Hold on, let me call her." Like the other guy. And we're like right there, and you know, and they can hear him. It was really funny. I
mean, you know, he could hear every
word. Oh, yeah. And they were just, they were chirping at him the whole time. He's like, "Hey, Angel, I got a little bit of this hot dog left. You want some?" It was funny, dude. But I've got to say, dude, I couldn't leave without bringing you something back. So I have something for you, dude. It is a Bobby Chaumont hockey puck from the Mississippi River Kings. That is the leading scorer of the CHL River Kings.
Dude. He wears my number.
He does.
Number 21.
That's right. So
Bobby Chaumont.
Enjoy.
This is awesome.
Dude, enjoy.
Thank you so much, dude. It's been a Merry Christmas.
Yes.
And a belated Christmas.
Happy New Year, dude.
And to you. Yeah, I didn't do anything hockey related over the holidays, but I did watch some World Juniors, which I actually was my first time watching World Juniors, and I have to say the play was good. I didn't watch the Canadian beatdowns, all of them over. I saw some stretches of those beatdowns over Kazakhstan, and I think the Czech Republic was another beatdown. They beat them 8-0 or something. Kazakhstan 15-0.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched a little bit of the U.S. and I watched some of the U.S. versus Canada. Good games. It's good hockey. I like watching the kids. It's really fun. It's a real popular event in Canada, so I'm definitely going to try and remember to watch it again next year because I like watching the hockey. And frankly, watching the U.S. team, I don't understand why they didn't have Nick Petrecki on that team, you know. But I only have the description to go from when it comes to Petrecki, so I'm going to have to. I also discovered that they do play Boston College games. You can actually watch Boston College games on NESN, which is the New England Sports Network. So I'm going to try to watch some Boston College games, and maybe we'll have a little scouting report on Nick Petrecki, because it's not that the U.S. defensemen were bad, far from it. It's just that they didn't, they certainly didn't have a guy rolling around out there that was 6'4", 220. So, and I could have, I would think that they could benefit from a guy like that. So I hope Petrecki, you know, I thought maybe he should get a better look, but he wasn't there. And unfortunately, the U.S. didn't really exactly meet expectations. But
what did you think of the Winter Classic, Mike?
I liked it. I thought the game was good. I thought I was more interested. It was a cool spectacle. I bet the seats, if you were in the stands, you probably couldn't see squat.
Right.
But it was a cool...
What are they thinking having the game at Wrigley? You know the Blackhawks are going to choke at the end. I mean, as scripted, you know, somewhere Bartman is going to reach out and take the puck away.
I think Moises Alou was in the outfield. But no, I just actually I saw it a little different way. I didn't really see it as a choke. I just sort of thought that the Red Wings just sort of slowly ground them out, and they just sort of came back slowly
but
steadily.
You're up 4-1. I mean...
And then what, they score five unanswered?
Yeah, that's a choke job.
I guess, but Detroit's that good, man.
They are.
They are that good. As unfortunately the Sharks found out not too long ago. So.
They did.
But we had so many games in the interim. We had four away games and a home game, the Islanders. Sharks, they're tailing off a little bit. They're a little bit of a rough patch. Lost two games in overtime. They won two games, and... as we found out tonight, they got crushed by the Flames, essentially crushed.
So our last five were 2-1-2.
That's right. So, not great.
Not terrible.
No.
But it is a little bit of the skids here, we're finding.
Yeah, you know, I didn't like seeing the Blues, losing to the Blues. They're the 15th best team in the West. Why do you lose to the Blues? Even in overtime, you shouldn't. That should be 2 points.
Yeah.
Especially a team that's got 60 points right now.
And some teams just have other teams' numbers, and it seems like the Blues, Andy Murray has figured out how to kind of put, you know, mud in the Sharks' skates. He's just able to slow them down.
I know.
And the games are, they're entertaining. I mean, mm-hmm. they go back and forth, but the Blues kind of have figured out how to play the Sharks. You just hope that people aren't watching a ton of tape at those games and applying the same strategies, but maybe they are. I mean, tonight was certainly a different contest than what we saw the last time they played the Flames.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Flames in a second, but we should talk about the other games too. Dallas, I think Dallas just got sort of outclassed by the Sharks. It's not particularly noteworthy the way that they played. Maybe call me crazy, but I'm still a little surprised that Dallas is as bad as they are, and Turco is playing as bad as he is. I mean, he still has a save percentage far under 900. I think it's 880 or something. I mean, that is horrid. Last I looked in the stats, he was 47th in the NHL in save percentage. I mean, that's very unlike Turco. And his goals against, needless to say, is not good. Although they have been on a bit of an uptick since Avery left the team, but still, I'm still so surprised how bad they are. I guess I just missed it, or the fact that Zuboff and Morrow is out just hurts them so much.
I think when you lose the heart and soul of your team, like Morrow, it's gonna sting. They're scrambling to still recover from the Avery mess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're hanging around. The thing that concerns me about Dallas is that they're gonna find a way to kind of claw their way back into the playoff picture, and hopefully we don't have to. We're far superior to they are in talent, but you hope it's not a mental thing when you have to match up with them in the playoffs. The ghosts of playoff paths coming. And right. bite you, but I'm not afraid of them. They certainly are lacking in talent, and you know, I wasn't a fan last year, and I was surprised how well they did.
Right.
It was chemistry, and this year they just don't have it.
Right, right. In the Wild game, I didn't think they played that poorly in the Wild game. I thought, I talked about this on the radio show last week, I thought the Wild got a really lucky call with the Joe Thornton interference call late in the game, which they scored on the power play. I think it was in the third period. It wasn't late in the third, but it was in the third period. And then the Sharks managed to score the tying goal with 25 seconds left in order to get a point, and then they lost in overtime. So it could have easily been a loss to the Wild. I think the Wild got a little lucky. I think the Sharks got a little lucky in that there was a goal that was disallowed that shouldn't have been. The Wild got some posts and things like that, but I wasn't that disappointed in the effort overall. Of course, it could have been better. I think they match up well against the Wild, and I'm surprised they didn't win, but It could have been worse. And
Wilder's so boring, dude.
Yeah.
I hate watching them play. I haven't watched them play a game other than when they play the Sharks. I won't watch them on center ice. I can't stand it. It's so boring. I mean, I know defensively the system works. And as we've talked about, when it gets to the playoffs, it's exposed as being ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But offensively, I can't take it. They're so dull. 97 goals they've scored all year. Do you know who has scored the least amount of goals this year in the NHL? You're going to be stunned. You'll never guess it.
I'll never guess it. It's not Tampa.
Watch. You'll guess it.
It's not the Wild or Tampa then.
No.
Two
more guesses.
Two more guesses. I'm going to have to go with the Hurricanes.
No.
One
more guess.
One more guess. I'm going to go with...
You'll never get it.
The Predators.
No.
What is it?
Ottawa Senators.
Oh, really?
The worst offensive team, 89 goals.
Wow.
The Ottawa Senators.
How the mighty have fallen.
Wow.
But we should talk about the Islanders game because there were some important things that happened in the Islanders game, and that's the Sharks lost their killer instinct, which they seemed to have early in the season, and for some reason they didn't have it against the Islanders. Islanders, at the time, and I believe still are, the worst team in the NHL in terms of points. Or close to it. And the Sharks just could not close. And at one point it was 4-3 late in the third. Islanders were...
It was 4-1 with, I think, 4 minutes left. The Islanders, I give them a ton of credit. I've actually watched them play a couple times in the last couple of weeks just by dumb luck.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they don't have a lot of talent, and I'm not sure where they're going as a franchise, but they play hard. Gordon has them playing hard, and they did not quit, even mm-hmm. they were down 4-1, and that's how they were able to scratch and claw their way back. We made Richard Park look like Jaromir Jagr. Jeez.
I know.
Dude.
How many teams has that guy been on? And it's not that he doesn't have any talent or any skill, but you wouldn't think a guy like Richard Park would beat, like almost single-handedly beat the first-place team in the league. That should not happen.
Yeah. Well, he almost did it.
It almost happened, and Pleahall had the puck on his stick late in the game with an empty net, and he chose to make a saucer backhand pass to Joe Thornton, who was covered. And luckily, there was a bit of a scrabble, and it came out to Marleau, who scored empty net. But McClellan particularly pointed out that play and said, "You got the puck on your stick 15 minutes left in empty net. Why do you not put the puck in the net?"
And this... what might have prompted what we heard is what a players only meeting where the, mm-hmm. they talked about, you know, how, you know, that effort was unacceptable. They got to learn how to close out the games. And McClellan's response to that was shaking up the lines tonight, Mike.
Which, epic fail. I think if I had to use two words, epic fail. The Sharks didn't get a shot until they didn't get a shot for the first 15 minutes of the game. They literally did not have a possession in the offensive zone the first 15 minutes of the game. They would try to get a deep, Calgary pick it up, break out, no problem, break in, scoring chance, back to the neutral zone, rinse and repeat. It was horrifying to see that. It was like Ron Wilson hockey. I don't know what was going on.
It was weird because we were sitting there, we were watching the game, and then Doc Brown showed up with the DeLorean and Michael J. Fox got out and said, "We're going back to the future to Ron Wilson. We're going to shake up the lines." I don't understand it. It clearly was not the way to get the team's attention. He, to his credit,
mm-hmm.
he admitted his mistake and
put Marleau and Joe back together.
You have to wonder what would have happened tonight if it had been that way. You know, the Sharks dominated the second period and mm-hmm. most of the third until they got that fifth goal. If they had played the whole game, the normal lines, what would have happened tonight, Mike?
It's hard to know, but you know, I hate to say it, and this is the first time definitely I would have said it this season, is that this is on McClellan's head,
yeah,
this loss. And
and I think he'll take some responsibility mm-hmm. for it.
It's not that I think, you know, I'm really mad at it. Of course, you know, he thought that was the right thing to do, and you got to trust your instinct or your gut in that situation, or he had a reason for it. I don't know exactly what the reason was. It didn't work out, and luckily he had the foresight, or the hindsight, rather, to change it up. And I can't imagine Ron Wilson saying, "Well, I'm just going to put it back." Ron Wilson would have tried a different combination. We would have seen, you know, Staubitz and Gotch and Joe on the top line.
How bad was Marcel Gotch tonight?
Bad. just not good. So basically the story of the Flames was the Sharks spotted the Flames 3 goals and couldn't make it up, because the Flames are certainly not the same Flames team that we saw in the 6-2 drubbing that we laid down on them a couple of months ago. The Flames are now playing very well, and they get good opportunities from all lines, and they're certainly going to be a dangerous opponent. I you know, that's a team that could be very dangerous in the playoffs as well. I think they're leading the division right now.
They are, but that division's so tight. I mean, it could go either way, but right now the Flames are leading the division. And yeah,
but the last 2 games, the weird storyline, or one of the weird storylines, was Alexei Semenov playing forward. So do we have a verdict on that particular experiment?
Terrible.
Yeah, again, epic fail.
Terrible. 5 minutes he played tonight. He had 6 penalty minutes. And probably the worst call I've ever seen in a hockey game, Mike.
Ever.
Worst penalty call. First of all, Semenov and Andre Roy.
Mm-hmm. Or Wah.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they tango in together, and you know, Semenov is grabbing onto him while the other guy's trying to throw a punch, and then just throws him to the ground.
Right.
And the Flames player skates away, shaking his head, going, "You are a loser."
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
for not even trying to fight. So what does the guy do when they get out after 2 minutes?
He comes right after him again.
He goes right after Semenov and says, "I want a piece, and you're going to give it to me." Semenov obliges. They drop the gloves, and
they both throw some punches. Nothing connects.
They throw several punches.
Each. Yeah.
And then again, Semenov
takes a little shot. It looked like Semenov took a bit of a shot, and then once Semenov takes a hit, he quickly loses his taste for the fight. Grabs onto the guy and then wrestles him down.
He wrestles him to the ground. That's how his fights always end, with Semenov wrestling the guy to the ground.
Right, because he doesn't like fighting. I mean, it doesn't look like a particularly pleasant thing, but still, it's pretty wuss.
And then
they get 2 minutes.
They
each
get for two roughing, minutes each for roughing,
which has got to be the craziest, dumbest call I've
ever
seen.
They stumped Drew Remenda.
Drew Remenda was beside himself. He was beside himself about it. It was funny. It was fun. You couldn't believe it. And it was Bill McCreary, who's been reffing in the league for 20 years.
How can you justify that call? Where does that come from?
You can't. It's absolutely unbelievable. At least it didn't give one team or another or the other an advantage. But still, in terms of just flat out the worst call ever, that could be the worst call ever.
God, please, no more Semenov, Mike. Please.
So he's not good when the Sharks are in the lineup.
No, the Sharks with Semenov in the lineup are 8-3-3. So the Sharks have lost 10 games this year.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, overall, they're
29-5-5.
29-5-5.
Right.
All right, so they've lost 10 games. Semenov's been in the lineup for 6. Yeah. So the Sharks have a winning percentage of .571 with Semenov in the lineup. So if we're projecting that, let's say Semenov was a regular. He played every game.
Mm-hmm.
So that means the Sharks would be 22-9-8, according to my projections.
Nice.
And they'd have 52 points, which would put them 5 points ahead of the Mighty Ducks, or the just plain old Ducks.
Right.
And it also would actually place them in the third seed,
mm-hmm,
in the West.
And right now, they're actually 16 points up on the Ducks. So we're talking about a major... It's, you know, it's not a lot of games. It's only 14 games. It's not a huge sample size, but it's unnerving how much they lose when Semenov's in the lineup. 60% of their losses were when Semenov's been in the lineup, and Semenov has only played 14 games out of 39.
How, as a management person, can Doug Wilson allow this guy to be on the roster? He contributes nothing. And if you want to defend Semenov, and I know that some people have taken some shots at me on the blog for giving Semenov a hard time, I want you to explain to me what does he bring to the table as far as contributing to the team? So maybe this is the poll question, Mike.
Yeah, okay.
To our listeners, Semenov, keep him, release him.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you want? What do you say? Is he a good fill-in, or is he just a black hole, waste of space? Let us know what you think.
Right. I'm with you. I think, you know, you give Derek Jocelyn a shot. I mean, can Derek Jocelyn be worse
than
that?
He was chosen to be on the AHL All-Star team today.
That's right. So Jocelyn, and we have Mike Moore in the minors who's playing well. I mean, Mike Moore we may not be able to bring up for salary cap reasons, but the fact is that there are other guys around that probably should be playing.
Absolutely.
And Semenov is 27 years old. He's not going to be getting much better, unfortunately. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but the fact is he's not a very good player, and he doesn't seem to have a very good track record here. It's it may be time to go. But, you know, speaking of the AHL.
You know what time it is. It's Lemieux Watch 2009!
Oops, wait, hold on. hold on. Stop.
You know what time it is.
Stop it. Jeez.
Technology.
I know, you gotta love it. And just when I got the guy to say 2009 and everything, oh well.
If anyone wanted to confuse this for a professional broadcast, we just got full-on exposed.
Hold on.
Dude, Lemieux Watch, this last 2 weeks.
A lot of stuff happened.
A lot of stuff's happened. We'll get to his contract status in a moment. But you can hear my cell phone going off.
Oh, man.
Boy, this is a rags to riches show today, Mike.
It certainly is.
One goal, two assists, minus one, 19 shots, 8 penalty minutes, giving Mr. Lemieux in 18 games. He's got 8 points, 20 PIMs, and he's a plus two. And he's an assistant captain now, A.
Wow, no kidding.
Yeah.
And most importantly, the Sharks signed him to a two-way deal. So the tryout contract came due, and the Sharks elected to sign him to a two-way deal. So the pieces are slowly coming in place to Lemieux actually joining the Sharks. And he cleared waivers in order for that contract to be signed, which he did. Lemieux now possibly could join the Sharks.
Possibly? Mike!
I gotta say,
it's gonna happen.
I'm patting myself on the back, or rather I'm patting you on the back, because we were way out in front of this. Nobody else called this except us or you.
It makes sense. It's exactly the formula that Doug Wilson's been looking for.
I know.
And this guy, I'm telling you, that Shelley Lemieux, Jeremy Roenick line is going to make us all smile when it comes to the playoffs. It's going to be hilarious. It's going to be awesome. Those guys are, no one's going to want to play them for 10 minutes a night.
You're right.
It's going to be horrible. And then if you don't want to put Shelley out there in the third period, then you have someone like Torrey Mitchell double shift with that line. A Torrey Mitchell with those two guys would be amazing.
Yeah, it would be.
And talk about a pest line.
Yeah.
So annoying. I mean, they would draw so many penalties. It's going to be exciting, and it looks like he's got something left in the tank.
And there's good news on the salary cap front, because I did a little bit of research in the CBA about that, and this whole 35 years old salary cap thing, it appears that, at least the way I read it, the Sharks could bring Lemieux up to the big club this year. You know, of course, they would be responsible for the salary prorated daily as it is, but they could send him back down and it would come off the books in terms of the cap. So
really?
Yes, because the CBA says the guy has to be A, in a multi-year deal, and B, in the second or later years of that multi-year deal, which isn't the case with Lemieux. He's signed a one-year two-way contract. So they can send him up, bring him up, send him down, just like any of the other minor leaguers like Staubitz or Kavanaugh. So Lemieux, they have the same flexibility as they do with anybody else.
Hmm.
So at least that's my reading of it. And no one has contradicted me as of yet. So I'm going with that. I'm the authority now.
So then might we see him sooner rather than later?
We could see him soon, right? I mean, if we're juggling Staubitz and Kavanaugh and all these other guys, and we really want to know how Lemieux's going to do, if he's in game shape, we might see him in a couple weeks.
I'll tell you why he's in game shape, because Wersher had a really wacky schedule at the beginning of the new year where they played a game on the 2nd, the 3rd, and the 4th, and Lemieux played in back-to-back-to-back games. If that can't tell you that this guy's still got something left in the tank, he contributed, he had 10 shots in those games, he had 2 points.
It's good.
Yeah, he was a minus one, 6 penalty minutes.
So this Lemieux thing may come true even sooner than we think.
I guess so.
All right. Good times. So coming up, we have Vancouver and Edmonton. So we're doing a Western Canada sweep here on the road. We have Vancouver and Edmonton back to back. You know, what's the prediction? Calgary obviously didn't look so good there, especially in the first. The Sharks kind of righted themselves, but it wasn't enough to pull back within shooting distance of getting a point out of that game. Vancouver and Edmonton are tough. It's always tough to play in Canada. What's your call?
Well, dude, I'm kind of looking at an alarming stat right now. That in his last 10 games, Christian Ehrhoff is a minus dead air,
minus 11 in his last 10 games. Wow.
So this big boy needs to sit down, I think. He's a -3 tonight.
He already got a healthy scratched a couple games ago.
So this is the problem. We've got guys banged up. Mm-hmm. There's maybe a confidence issue happening right now. You've got a player like Ehrhoff who started off super hot, and now I don't know what his problem is. I mean, mm-hmm. he's on the ice whenever things seem to be going wrong. And you're going into two places that are tough to play without your grinding specialist who's going to stick up for your guys, Jody Shelley. I don't know if he's going to play this week. Mm-hmm. This fact that Staubitz is here leads me to believe he's not. So
I think,
are we in trouble this week, Mike?
I think, to be honest, I'm sort of predicting a split, one win, one loss. I think actually I would be pretty happy with a split, to be perfectly honest with you. If we split those games, if we got 2 points in two games, I would be pretty happy.
It's a deadly trip.
It is.
Yeah, it's a tough trip. Edmonton is, you know, they're playing well. Sundin is joining the Canucks tomorrow night. They will have played the night before against St. Louis, so that will have been his home unveiling. Mm-hmm. So we could catch the Canucks off a little bit of a high. They beat St. Louis, Sundin's debut. The parade is unveiled, and people are so excited with their legalized marijuana in Vancouver. And they go crazy, and they come back Saturday night and lay an egg. So I'm going to say loss in Edmonton, win in Vancouver.
Okay. It's a good call. It's a good call. Let's go to the next issue, which is the All-Star game. The Sharks don't have any All-Star starters.
Bogus.
The whole All-Star thing is kind of a joke, but for some reason I can't really get that worked up about who belongs, who doesn't. I mean, I think of all the picks, I mean, there are so many bad ones, but Jagera might be the worst of them. But Komisarek, I mean, that's kind of bad. But in the East. But we're going to talk about the West. We're going to try and predict the other players that Todd McClellan or the league or whoever picks the rest of the lineup for the West. We're only going to do the West because, frankly, that's all we care about. We could do the East, but then it'll be a 30-minute segment and we don't have that kind of time. So let's call with the West. So let's do the forwards. We got Kane, Taves, Getzlaff starting.
Correct. Okay.
So I got Joe, of course.
Correct.
Aginla.
Yes.
Datsyuk.
Yes.
I have Marlowe.
I have Marlowe too.
Okay.
I think his career has been completely revived. He's been excellent defensively, which I think is a topic for another evening mm-hmm. that you've been doing some interesting research on. He's been great this year. He deserves to be an All-Star.
Okay. Rick Nash?
Yes.
I have Daniel Sedin.
I do too.
Okay. I have Mika Koivu.
I do not.
Okay. And I have Shane Doan.
I do too.
So sort of one of the things I'm trying to do, and I think maybe what the coaches of the league might be trying to do, is trying to get as many players from as many different teams as possible. Maybe Doan or Koivu aren't the best picks in terms of just straight out who's the best players, but you kind of want to throw a little bone to some of those cities. I mean, Minnesota, traditionally, they don't have a lot of offensive, like crazy offensive guys. Mm-hmm. Gabrick's been out. So that's why I kind of pick Koivu and Doan. Close but no cigar, I have Seto, Zetterberg, and Brad Boies. So those are guys that are on the outside looking in terms of my roster. So who you got?
I've got Thornton, Aginla, Datsyuk, Daniel Sedin, Marlowe, Nash, Doan, and Marian Hossa.
Okay, Marian Hossa.
And Alex Hemschke.
1, 2, 3. Yeah, okay. Okay, so that means I do have Zetterberg in. And Boies.
I think Hossa is going to get the nod over Zetterberg.
You think Hossa will over Zetterberg?
That's interesting. Just my thought.
You know, it's not that crazy. If there were more wings starting, I think it might be other players. So okay, that's pretty close. Let us know what you think, listeners. Questions at dudesonhockey.com. We'll have to recap next week and figure out how close we got. So On the defensive side, Campbell and Scott Niedermeyer are starting. I have Boyle.
Yes.
I have Surrey.
Yes.
I have Shea Weber.
Yes.
And I have Duncan Keith as my fourth.
Whoa.
Right. With Lidstrom on the outside looking in and Blake on the outside looking in.
While I think Duncan Keith might be more deserving for his overall all-around play.
Yeah.
He's there been good is this no year. Way that they're not going to take Lidstrom.
Really?
He'll be there.
Even though Rafalski deserves it more.
He'll be there.
So, I'd put Rafalski over Lidstrom.
Either. I would, too, based on the year. But I think Lidstrom's going to be there.
So, you have Boyle, Surrey, Weber, and Lidstrom as your four.
Right. And it's possible, because Weber's kind of tailed off. Surrey, I don't get no respect, maybe. Mm-hmm. Those two guys are not locks, I don't think. But
I think there isn't... If Hemsky doesn't go for Edmonton,
Surrey goes
I think Surrey
sure.
is definitely in.
Agreed.
Okay, so Jaguar is the starter, which is a joke. Okay. I'm a little torn. You know, in my initial list, I had Mason.
Right.
Steve Mason, who has some amazingly gaudy numbers, but he's only played 22 games. So that's not a lot.
In his NHL career.
Correct. But he's an under 2 goals against and a 930 something.
Having a great season, but you can't reward a guy for 22 good games. I don't see them doing it. The numbers bear that he should be there, but I just don't think they're going to go for it, Mike.
And then I'm not sure about Nabby. I think Backstrom may get the nod over Nabby.
I'm going Nabby and Backstrom. But,
okay.
I say Nabby sort of on thin ice, especially after tonight. I mean, I don't think that's going to have any effect, but you know, his save percentage is low.
It's gotten a lot better lately. I think he's around 910, and for a while there, he was actually under 900, which is not good. But yeah, the goalies, for me, I feel the least sure about that. I sort of feel like they could pull something out of thin air and say, you know, Dwayne Roloson or something. Or they, you know...
Could go with Kiprusoff. He leads the Western Conference in wins.
That's right. Especially, and after tonight, he...
How about this dark horse? Ty Conklin.
Ty Conklin's not even the starter. He doesn't have enough games. All right.
I bet you Ty Conklin's played as many games as Mason.
I don't think so. Okay, we'll have to look that up. But we only have one story in the shootout because we're running out of time. And the story is that we had the Alexander Semin fight, and we had Sidney Crosby punching a guy in the nuts from behind. So we had a question in the comment section saying, which is better and which is worse? And for those of you who haven't seen these incidents, you got to go on YouTube, especially the Semin fight, because that I've seen it like 10 times, and I literally laugh out loud every time.
It never gets old.
It is so funny.
Have you ever seen the Muppets?
It's serious, like he's playing the drums. I mean, the backswing to a punch is behind you, not up by your head.
Maybe Semin got Rock Band for Christmas too.
Yeah, I got Rock Band for Christmas. Maybe you got Rock Band. But in terms of me, there's no question which is worse. The Semin thing is worse. I mean, it's one thing to fight a little dirty and to punch a dude in the chons, which happens, you know, and maybe Crosby did or didn't mean to do it.
Mike didn't mean to do it.
All right, whatever.
Crosby went around behind the guy and wound up and punched him in the taint, Mike.
From behind.
Can we say taint?
Yes, we can.
We just did.
So, but to me, playing a little dirty, unfortunately, is sometimes part of hockey. That is okay. Not knowing how to punch a guy, beating him with your fists like a girl fight, not acceptable.
It was a little slappy.
It was like happy slappy hero pup. It was bad, man. It was bad. It was brutal.
No.
So that you think the Crosby thing's worse, punching a dude and writing the stones?
That is not okay under any circumstance.
So you're going with a happy scrappy then?
Yeah, I think intentionally going behind a man who is bent over and winding up and extending your fist into...
He said he didn't even feel it, so no harm, no foul, right?
Well, I guess, I don't know, he didn't even feel it. What does that say for him? Oh my, hello.
Well, I think that does it for Dudes on Hockey this week. We'll be back again on the regular schedule again next week, Wednesdays. We will talk to you then. Make sure to read the blog at sharks.hockeyanalysis.com, and go Sharks.
Welcome back, dude.
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.